Добро пожаловать к Дэвид Ли Роф. Будьте готовы быть испачканным грязью, быть пристыженным и устыдиться того, что вы еще живы. Welcome to David Lee Roth. Prepare to feel filthy, ashamed, and completely alive.
Going to the movies, Roth Radio, David Lee Roth, large in charge. I got Danny as my special guest here. And we also have somebody calling in who's a special guest. It's Joel Siegel. He's the film critic for ABC TV's Good Morning America. He's going to be giving us a call in about 15 or 20 minutes. So there's a few other subjects to discuss about the Oscars coming up here. What about the music that goes along for movies today? Usually when you talk about the movies, well, you know what? Let's continue on here. We got a lot of phones that lit up about, well, somebody's got a bone to pick. Amy, maybe it's mine. Go ahead, Roth Radio. You're on.
Hello?
You're on, Amy.
Yeah, this is 2006. How shocking is, two gay men, cowboys or not, number one. Number two, this is a love story. Does it really matter, if they're two men or two women or, both, or what time setting it was in? This is supposed to be a love story. And do you think that there really weren't, gay people who lived the cowboy lifestyle ever?
Oh, I'm sure there were, but it's a small percentage, just like in any other lifestyle. Okay,
well, I think this is telling a story. How is this different than Romeo and Juliet or any other typical love story? The only thing that's different is the setting, the genders.
I think what's different is that it's set up against a context of almost a religious icon in American culture, all right? You have a priest, you have a police officer, you have a cowboy, you got a fireman, you got a soldier. These are all kind of action figures in our culture. They're supposed to be archetypes, mentors, role models, heroes, whatever those kinds of terminology that you care to use. And when you go ahead and disassemble something like that, it gets a major, major kind of a reaction. I'm with you in terms of this is not a news story. We all heard about the crying game, and that was a big wrinkle in the fabric when that came out. Robin Williams in La Cage aux Folles, that was a really interesting comedic twist on the old romantic love story, and he played a gay guy. We've seen these kinds of stories routinely, but it's set against the backdrop of cowboys, and particularly in a time of war, America, we go back to what is the most familiar. What spells America? What's safe? Mom, God, apple pie, and cowboys. Do you agree or you disagree with me?
I disagree only on the cowboy part. How many gay cowboys have there been?
Oh, probably one out of 10,000, but that's kind of the ratio of any other lifestyle, isn't it?
Tens of thousands.
Sorry?
How many tens of thousands of cowboys have there been?
There's been tens of thousands of cowboys, but I'm saying that it's probably the 1% that accounts for any kind of inner city community.
That 1% equals up to 250,000, 500,000 actual individuals over the last couple hundred years who actually experienced this, who were gay. And this is telling a story. This isn't generalizing it. This isn't attacking cowboys.
Oh, I think and I think most of the people perceive it as an attack on the cowboy mythic. I don't necessarily see it as an attack on the cowboy myth. I see it somebody exploiting the cowboy myth in an effort to be really shocking and get a whole lot of attention for what may potentially be just a regular, normal story. Kind of like when Madonna runs out of musical ideas, she kisses a girl in public. Boom! Instant left-hand side of the Billboard charts. Top five again, at least during the talk show matter. Do you agree or disagree?
I agree with that. My wife just told me they were not cowboys, they were sheep herders. I don't know. I haven't seen the movie.
That's a whole different movie, darling. And I love your taste, but I want to talk to you about it, but not until Friday night. Thanks for calling. 866-313-3733. Kathy, talk to me. NYC spells with David Lee. You're on. Go, Kath.
Hi, David. It's Kathy from the Beach House downtown. How you doing?
Extraordinary, Kath.
Oh, good, good. I have a copy of Brokeback, which I'd like to leave for you so you could see it. It's for awards consideration. And the point I wanted to bring out is it was referring to a time in the 60s And again, I heard the last caller about being a sheep herder, which I found quite amusing. But the 60s, they ended up getting married. They both had children. And it's about leading a double life. And I think there's such a dichotomy in society where we're all forced to feel somehow that we can't be free to be ourselves. And I think that is the message, the true message in the movie. And I think that's what touches so many people's souls, much more so than the cowboy issue or the gay issue, is the fact that, hey, why can't we just be who we are?
Okay, so you're saying that the message is exemplary, but that they use perhaps some shocking element to draw the horse to water so we can take the drink. Agreed?
That's the point.
That's a great theatrical maneuver, and I like the way you think. I don't know, again, that is so shocking, all right? What's shocking is that it's a cowboy. We saw the exact same story in La Cage aux Folles, but it was a lot more digestible because it was humor. It was done with a lot of self-deprecating kind of funny implied. I don't know that there's anything really funny about this movie, is there, Kathy? I have not seen it.
No, absolutely not. There's nothing funny. It's very soulful.
Okay.
And I think from a Libra perspective, which is what I am, and I think you are also, from someone who analyzes things and likes to be well-educated, I really wanted to see it because I had the same feelings as you did. I was listening this morning, and I said, you know what, I just saw it two nights ago. And it actually broke my heart, all kidding aside, that in the 60s, the ignorance of the redneck, how, I don't want to say on the air, but what they would do to someone if they found out that they did have this double life would tie something to their private part and drag them around town till that was actually ripped off of them. There's so much of this.
Oh, come on now. There's places downtown where that's $150 and you're done by Saturday.
Yeah, and I was there the other night. But anyway,
that was you?
The point being that I'd like to leave a copy of the awards nomination for you, and I could leave it at the beach house if you want to pick it up. And perhaps take a quick look at it. I think that...
Oh, at some point, I'm definitely going to watch it because it's a very telling kind of a story in that we really have become so upset about what's really a common part of the culture. Come on, man. Who do you think designs the cowboy boots these days?
Well, this is very true also.
Who do you think designs the latest boot cut jean with the low cut front that Paris Hilton is waltzing around? That's my kind of cowgirl.
And the short hairs are hanging out the top. I agree with you. I just thought that the one point that wasn't brought out was the point that they were forced to lead double lives, and a lot of people in society do that. They just can't be themselves. They just can't say, hey, this is me, dig it or don't dig it.
And you think that's what really plugged into our heart and soul then?
My heart and soul, absolutely, and I think many others who I've spoken to just in the last 48 hours about it, and I was thrilled to hear you bring it up on your show.
Interesting thoughts. Thanks for giving us a call, Kath. 866-313-3733. Let's see if we get the alternative. Call Joe there, calling from NYC, number 14, Hutch. Go ahead, Joe, you're on.
Yeah, how you doing, Dave?
Great, Joe. What's cooking?
Hey, you sound great. You're exactly what I like to listen to in the morning in the city. I think that's what we need, some real fresh perspective. I don't know what
Thanks so much.
West Coast on that. But at any rate, about this Brokeback Mountain, I understand it started as an indie film, and is it any truth to the rumor that there was the original title was Reach Around Mountain?
No, but I'm going to give an entire nation a California reach around right now, baby. Put out the track. Yeah. Okay. Indiana Slamma back in the house. David Lee Roth, Large Danny is my special guest. Has anybody changed your mind, Danny, now that we've discussed this both ways and on the side of the coin, including, does this alter your perspective at all?
No, I think you bring up a good point about it breaking down the conventional notion of a cowboy, but I think the last caller, Kathy, hit the nail on the head that it really is about people not being able to live the lives they want because they're afraid of societal influence and disregard.
And I think the last thing that we probably want to see is the person next door. You don't want to see exactly your life every time. As we have the vicarious experience, the same way as when somebody throws the football, you feel it land in your hands 3,000 miles away watching a television set during the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And the same thing happens in the movies. I don't necessarily identify with those particular characters, but as you know, I am a relationship god, and I have left a trail of groupies, rubble, broken hearts, and allegations just in the last 3 weeks. This movie may actually speak to me. I don't know. You know, I saw La Cage aux Folles. Again, that's not my neighborhood. Great movie. I must have seen it half a dozen times. It speaks of a story that's very common to us. And when you use characters who are, quote unquote, left of center, did you ever see Sean Penn in I Am Sam or Sam Is My... Sam I Am, whatever, where he plays the mentally retarded or the disadvantaged guy who has a little girl. I think it's Dakota Fanning,
yeah,
is his daughter and whatever. Again, a really left-of-center character that allows you to suspend your disbelief perhaps long enough so you can just kind of identify with it as opposed to seeing it as a really marginal kind of character. Maybe inside of each of us there's a marginal character. I don't know. Maybe I think mine's probably closer to the Sean Penn character than the two guys in the tent. Look at Animal Smile. He was a little nervous there.
Yeah, but you know, like if I would watch, you know, Brokeback Mountain, it would have to be a actor that I liked and I knew it. And the only reason I would watch it is to see would he kiss the guy or something, because Alexander, what's his name?
Alexander Jason, the Great?
No, Jason Alexander from Seinfeld. He did a gay movie, and the only reason why I watched it just to see would he kiss a guy and stuff.
To see, man, if he'd actually go that far?
Yeah, and what's the dude from, let me see, what's the name of the movie?
Alexander the Great was just made with, Ferrell or whatever his name is?
Yeah, I think so.
Colin Farrell or whatever? He just did that, yeah, and he played that kind of a character.
What's the black guy from Armageddon? What's the big black guy?
I don't know.
Anyway, he did a gay movie, too. And I watched it just to see what he kiss a guy, man. But he didn't do it, so I still got respect for him.
To see if he'd go that far.
Yeah, just to see what he'd go that far.
Wait, you wanted to see if you had to, like, cross these actors off your list or something?
You know what I'm saying? I was going to cross them off my list, man, if they'd have kissed the guy. But they didn't do it, and I'm still a great fan of Jason Alexander, knock on wood. But
we speak only the truth as we know it on Roth Radio, and we represent all of las comunidades. Carl, you're on. Talk to me. Roth Radio. David Lee Roth, right here. You're on, Carl. Go ahead.
Hey, Dave.
What's up?
No, and I saw Brokeback Mountain. I actually liked it.
Okay.
You know, based off true events and everything like that.
Okay, so what do you think is attractive about this to all of the American public, that we're all talking about it like this? What's the big moment in this?
The fact that it's, you know, talking about that weekend that you and Hagar spent up in the woods together on Punk-Ass Mountain.
That was Eddie Van Halen, ladies and gentlemen, and as you can see, he's still in rehab. 866-313-3733. Send that boy back into the tent. Okay, Charlie from Brooklyn, talk to me. Number 8, you're on.
What's happening, Dave Road? It's the C-Metal from Brooklyn.
What's up, bro?
What's up, man? I just wanted to, like, remind you all of that old cowboy song, Mama, Don't Let Your Baby to Grow Up to Be Cowboy.
And there you go. Don't let them drive pig... don't let them pick guitars and drive them old trucks.
That's right, I know. Wear them tight jeans and ride those bulls that buck.
You don't sound like you have a Texas accent. How do you come to be such an authority on cowboys, Charlie?
Well, I'm just well-read, man, and, you know, in musical culture, basically, man. I'm a drummer from an old heavy metal band in Brooklyn called Disciples. Big Van Halen, David Lee Roth fan. I always defended you during the old days, when all the other cats would take the side of a psycho Van Halen brother.
There you go. Okay, now you sound like somebody who has a fairly worldly view here, and you have no truck with this movie. It's fine if it's a fine thing. It's okay with you, correct?
Well, I saw an episode on King of the Hill where they made a spoof of the gay rodeo. I thought it was hysterical, man. I'm a father, man. I'm basically heterosexual myself, but, you know.
Sure.
Basically.
It all comes back a long way. Remember the movie Alexander? There was a lot of crazy going on there.
Okay, now they're beeping him. Don't worry.
Oof, I'm sorry, man.
Not a problem.
Very sorry. D-Ro.
Yo.
Read your book, man, a long time ago when it came out.
Yep.
You're a kindred spirit, man.
Thank you.
I went through the same type of hazing with, like, guitar players in my band.
There you go. Okay, well, he's talking about conflict. And the conflict, whether it takes place in a cowboy's tent or whether it takes place on the movie screen. I think we're getting kind of a support for this in general. What do you think, Danny? Are most people kind of standing up for this?
I'm surprised they actually are.
Yeah. You know, well, you know, you get a reading here. When people call in on this show, we don't yell over them. 9 times out of 10, the liberal left, and I am so left, I support premises that you don't even know how to spell yet, okay? Usually, the liberal left, when we get on the phone and we contest with something, we yell over the phone callers. If somebody calls up and disagrees with us in politics or about a movie or a book or something, all we do is turn them down and yell over them constantly. You hear this on a lot of other radio programs. And here, You get both sides of the coin and the edge here, because I can't make up my mind at all. I'm Libra, just like the girl brought up earlier. Curious that Libra is the sign that governs the kidneys and the buttocks. Look out, cowgirl.
Yeah.
Coming up in just a little bit here is going to be Joel Siegel, and he's calling in. He's the film critic for ABC TV's Good Morning America. I'm wondering what America chooses according to what the Oscars actually choose. You got the 78th Annual Academy Awards here, and most of these movies are not what showed up, for example, on the Razzies. We did the Razzies yesterday or the day before, and every single person in the room knew every single movie. You brought up Dukes of Hazzard, inarguably one of the worst movies in the history of the sport. Every single person knew every single scene that we brought up. We brought up Deuce Bigelow, American Gigolo. Everybody knew the words to the song. We brought up, Jenny McCarthy's movie. I don't know the title.
Dirty Love.
See? There's the peanut gallery. Everybody knows every single moment of these pictures. And yet, when you start to read through what actually got nominated, pictures like Crash or Good Night and Good Luck, you get a lot of blank looks. Crash is a great picture. I actually saw it. Yeah, I saw it on the TV set just the other night, actually, on the pay-per-view here. What about the music that's going on? Is music in the movies just as good as it always was? Was it ever any good? Because today, when you talk about movie music, it's usually a song stack. And it's got two hits in it. There's the Snoop Doggy remix in the middle, and there's the Lindsay Lohan pop tune that sits kind of up near the top, and they're called song stacks. And that's considered movie music today. What's listed as nominated for Best Movie Song, Hutch?
I've got three cuts here that are apparently nominated. I've got something from, let's see now, the movie Hustle and Flow.
Okay.
It's Hot Out Here for a Pimp.
Okay, put it up there, because this already sounds like song stack material. Genius. I am moved. I'm having a movement.
You know it's hard out here for a pimp. Bingo. When he trying to get his money for the rent. For the Cadillac and gas.
Okay, thank you. Okay, how about the next one there, Hutch? Can you read it and program the tune as well there? That was garbage. Who was that?
That was Jordan Houston, Cedric Coleman, and Paul Beauregard.
And that's actually nominated for Best Movie Song Title Soundtrack Thing? That's not the actual category, of course. But Best Original Song. Okay. Great snare drum. Play the next one, Hutch. Which is it?
This one is called In the Deep by Bird York, and it's from the movie Crash.
Okay, here's from Crash. This is the song that got selected for nomination for, you know, Best Movie Tune. Here we go. That's my favorite note.
Somebody wake me up when this is over.
I will, darling.
Put your head. All the answers.
Okay, start it again here, because what this actually is the Bee Gees from 1965. Let's go. Here, I'll show you. Play it from the top there, Hutch. Hit it. Okay. Go ahead, man. Great note. Here we go.
Here we go.
Bang it.
You ready?
Here we go. Started a tune that started the whole world laughing. I sang out of tune.
Don't you have all the answers?
I got the answers. All right, thank you. Okay, do we have anything after that? Or do we have a third tune? Did they only select three tunes?
No, this is the one from Dolly Parton that everybody's talking about and saying is going to win from the movie Transamerica.
I don't know what Transamerica is. Have you seen the picture, Danny? Do you know what that is?
It's Felicity Huffman, who is a man. She has a child, and it's sort of about the son dealing with the fact that his mom is transgendered.
What is going on in my city? Am I responsible for this in some bizarre way?
I think this takes place in the Midwest.
Please.
Go ahead, turn
this
it on.
This is called Traveling Through.
Hey.
Hey, that's the fast version of the first tune.
Hold on.
Was that the same tune?
That was not Dolly. Plagiarism.
Get out of my helicopter.
Right. Come on,
here
man.
We go.
You're supposed to be the navigator.
There you go.
Dolly went black. I like this.
Ooh, 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 ooh.
Okay, I hear that little trill. That's Dolly, right?
Yeah.
I like this. This is good.
I can't tell you where I'm going. I'm not sure where I've been.
She sounds like she's 12 and 38 at the same time, doesn't she?
Yeah, I love Dolly.
I'm out here on my journey trying to make the most of it.
And her voice has not aged a minute.
Figure out where all my pieces fit.
Sing it.
Like a poor wayfaring stranger that they speak about in song.
So you believe her.
I'm just a weary pilgrim trying to find what feels like home. Where that is, no one can tell me.
This is a great song.
I'm just traveling, traveling, traveling. I'm just traveling on.
Question. That'll win.
Okay,
that'll
win. That had better win. If they select that other garbage instead of this, because this is a song that you never heard before and you're already kind of singing the tune.
Yeah, that's great.
You don't even have to speak English to know what the emotional content of that song is.
It's country music with soul.
And her voice has not aged a minute. How old is this woman? She's got to be 60 years old. She's like Rolling Stones age, right? Yeah. I mean, literally, that's how I grade it.
I was raised on that kind of music.
You're either your age or my age or Rolling Stones age. Turn it up a little more.
Keep me.
Okay, I want a girl who has Dolly's personality, but drives around in the same rig that Paris Hilton is in right now. What do you think, huh? Is that a miracle hybrid?
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
Somebody give me a call here, 866-313-3733. I think that's the song that's going to go. In general, though, is movie music is just songs now, right? It used to be, you know, you can sing
soundtrack
stuff. If you say Wizard of Oz, you know what that soundtrack is. It's an orchestral kind of a thing. Or Sprach Zarathustra, the theme from 2001. That was movie music for that time period. But now it's a list of songs. I don't know if I prefer it that way. Roth Radio. Go ahead, Dan.
I just checked Dolly Parton. You're good. She was born January 19th, 1946.
Okay, bingo. Yeah, she's part of that generation. And that she's kept her voice like that, that's extraordinary stuff. That's a perishable skill. You got to keep singing and singing and singing and singing. That's amazing stuff. Does she still have Dollywood? She still has her theme park or whatever?
Yeah, in Missouri. Isn't it?
I got to get my own theme park. 866-313-3733. What, do you want to take a break? Is that what? Are you just saying, Dave, stop?
No.
Dave,
they're suggesting we take a break. We rolled with that.
They suggested we take a break because Joel's going to be with us in a minute. So
if
we take a break now, when we get back on the other side, we've got
I'll be the pilot. You navigate.
Land here, Hodge.
David Lee Roth, weekday mornings.
We're talking movies, and we're going to the movies with an expert here on Roth Radio. David Lee Roth, large and in charge. I have the very special privilege of talking to a very special guy, Joel Siegel. He's the film critic for ABC TV's Good Morning America. Good morning to you, Joel. How are you today?
Well, good morning to you, David. I'm terrific.
This is a very special time for the world and industry of cinema, is it not?
It certainly is. Oscar season has begun.
And this is amazing controversial time, too. We just got done with about 20 minutes of pro-con and somewhere in the middle on Brokeback Mountain. What's your take on this, Joel?
Brokeback Mountain was my best picture of the year.
Really? What accounts for that?
It's a great picture.
Okay, but what makes it a great picture, Joel?
The way it makes you feel when you leave the theater.
Okay.
The way it looks when you're watching it. How amazingly it's acted. Heath Ledger with virtually no... One of the things that I've learned watching a lot of movies over the last 20 years, what amazes me is the way an actor can let you know what he or she is feeling or thinking without saying a word. And Heath Ledger does that in this part.
So perhaps the best...
Amazing director, all kinds of different categories. My question is, people who don't like Brokeback Mountain, people who were opposed to it, people who were offended by it. How many of them have actually seen the movie?
Yeah, you're probably correct. You know, they are deconstructing a little bit of the cowboy mythic as it stands in America, and that's probably the most shocking element about it. But you're saying at the end of it, the result is a real special feel, and that's what sold it the most to you, Joel?
Well, also, you know, Unforgiven did that. Clint Eastwood really did that with Unforgiven.
I had solicited that idea earlier there. Yeah. Go ahead and speak to that.
And if you haven't seen this movie and you think it's a gay cowboy movie and you think it somehow promotes homosexuality and promotes a new lifestyle, it truly doesn't. The Heath Ledger character, about whom the film is victimized by this compulsion he never knew he had, and it destroys his life.
This is an interesting take on it here. Talk to me about Tom Cruise, because Tom, just as we read on the Razzies yesterday, was voted in many categories as the worst possible actor of all time.
I don't believe that.
Oh, yeah, but then wait a second.
No, I believe that for the Razzies, but I don't think he is. I think Tom Cruise is a very good actor.
So do I. And he was also listed as the most earning actor of the year, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, that's true.
You know, so do you think Tom is an excellent actor? What's your take on Tom?
No, I think I have interviewed. The first time I met Tom Cruise was right after Taps movie, when he was a little kid. He was on GMA, and he was very polite and very nice, and he was very impressive. And my take on Tom Cruise is that he's smarter than we think he is, and he's a better actor than he thinks he is.
I think he's a pretty good actor, because I've seen every single one of his pictures at least four or five times. And when we go out on the road to play shows, you see Spectrovision, and you can not only see your favorite movies, you can learn them. You can see you see them nine times, and you can memorize all your favorite scenes and all your favorite dialogue. You can conduct phone business, etc. And then you tell your friends, "Wait a second," and watch the scene, etc. So
I think Cocktail was the only truly mediocre movie he made.
Probably, right? But then again, that spoke to an entire generation in a certain sense, didn't it?
Yeah, and there are a couple scenes in Cocktail that are a lot of fun to watch 300 or 400 times.
Bingo. what did you think of Walk the Line? What was your take on Walk the Line, Joel?
I thought the performances were great. There's a lot of controversy there because it wasn't nominated for Best Picture. Had it been, it would have been the only movie that grossed more than $100 million that was nominated for Best Picture. I didn't think the film was that good. I thought the performances were much, much better than the film. Both of those performances, simply astonishing. And
what do you think was missing from the movie? What do you think was missing?
Of all of the things about Johnny Cash's life, the thing that interests me the least is his love affair with June Carter Cash.
Same here. I would think that it would be the tragedy and,
exactly,
you know, all of the turmoil and the demons that were alternately chasing him and he was chasing. And
you know, you write songs. Where does that come from? Where in his life did that come from?
Pain comes from rage. There's a very thin line, like the great jazz critic Nat Hentoff wrote, that said there's a very thin line between rage and great work. Without the rage, no great work.
And why isn't that in the movie? Something else about that movie, I'm just a little bit younger. I mean a little bit younger, like 6 months or a year younger. I would have given anything to watch, to go see Jerry Lee Lewis, Johnny Cash, and Elvis Presley, and Carl Perkins on the same bill. They really toured for Sun Records that way? Wow!
Yeah, that was interesting. I thought that her reflection, Reese Witherspoon's, was a little bit of a spring break quality to that. Is that just come along with the actors and actresses,
you know,
today?
That's funny. I thought that was very legitimate. Young woman from a show business family trying to make it, knowing that she couldn't sing that well, having to do something. I said in my review, if she doesn't win the Oscar, they ought to change the category, and I think she should win a Grammy. I was astonished. That's really her voice.
Yeah, that's interesting. Usually,
now you must have studied Johnny. One of the things that got me about Joaquin Phoenix, I know some people in the music business who didn't think he did a good job doing Johnny Cash, but I remember listening to Johnny Cash. I was a musician. Not good enough to make a living at it, which I, thank God, I understood when I was a kid. But I knew that Johnny Cash sang flat, and there's Joaquin Phoenix singing flat.
Yeah, you've got to. There's two things that are in front of you when an actor commits to a musical role. The first thing that an actor does is become somebody else. When the intrinsic value of music, at least popular music, is that it comes from a very real source. So you're confronted with two big issues. You're pretending to be somebody else, but the sound that comes out of you must be heartfelt. And the only way you can project it is to practice it. So you have pro and con working against you there.
That's very good.
Usually when an actor or an actress picks up a guitar or a microphone, they're directly imitating somebody. Mm-hmm. And I think what you're reflecting on is that she became the character, but she also sang from the heart. Very unusual coming from an actress.
Yeah,
agreed?
I agree. Absolutely.
Okay. You know what, Joel? Can you hang on for a couple of seconds here? It's a very important part of the process that we do commercials, but I got a few other questions for you and a couple of million people who are hanging on your every syllable. Will you wait?
Of course I can hold on.
God bless. Roth Radio. We'll be right back with Joel Siegel, film critic for ABC TV's Good Morning America, right after this. Roth Radio, David Lee Roth live, and this is a privilege. I'm talking to one of the most famous film critics ever, Joel Siegel, film critic for ABC TV's Good Morning America. Joel, are you still with us? Oh, thanks for joining us here this morning. I've watched you and heard you for so many years.
This is a little boy.
This is a privilege here. Talk to me about George Clooney. Who is this guy? Where did he come from, and where is he taking us?
You know, George Clooney's the real thing.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Honest to God, the real thing. He's used his clout as a movie star to make two of the best films this past year, Syriana and Good Night and Good Luck.
Which one was better in your estimation? Which one did you appreciate?
They both made my 10 best, but Good Night and Good Luck, I think, was the better film.
Well, I saw that just recently. I'm wondering if that movie should not be shown to every sixth grader in the entire United States and then
some. That's a very good idea. You know something about it, just in terms of filmmaking? First of all, it was black and white. I don't know if you noticed this. The only exterior shots in Good Night and Good Luck are during the commercials.
Ah.
Everything is inside it, so it's very claustrophobic, and there's no score.
Oh.
The only music in the movie is when they go to the bar near CBS and there's the jazz singer.
You know what? I have to go back now and see the picture with these things in mind. These are the kinds of moments that only somebody like Joel Siegel will share.
Way too many movies.
No, you don't. You see them and you point out these kinds of elements. I never realized that about the picture. This is something special.
And what it means is that George Clooney, this is the second movie he ever directed, George Clooney took a lot of chances when he made this movie. They made it for $7.5 million. He got people to work for, deferred payment. He worked for nothing. And he's such a good guy. He really is. Have you ever met him, talk to him?
No, I've never actually met him.
I've interviewed him a couple of times. He's very funny and a very good guy, very honest. And
is he almost
tied a Hollywood record.
Is he the future here? Is he going,
I hope so.
Is he going to combine the greater elements of independent with the greater elements of the blockbuster or popular cinema making?
I think that would be great. I think Steven Soderbergh, because his partner, has done the same thing. You know, together they make Ocean's 11 and Ocean's 12, and now they're working on Ocean's 13.
Were you a fan of the Ocean's 11 and 12?
Oh, yeah.
Me too.
Fun. Movies are allowed to be fun. It's okay.
I think so. Also, the music that is in Ocean's 12, for example, is what I qualify as actual cinematic music, as opposed to a tune stack of popular songs that'll be sold as singles later. And most of that music was reinvented to sound like old 60s Euro trash kind of movie music, etc. As much effort was easily put into the soundtracking as was, what you see on the screen. What do you think of the current crop of tunes and music that are being selected for best song or best theme or whatever?
That's something that I really don't know anything about, and it's not fair for me to have an opinion.
Okay.
I can tell you the song that I liked and the song that I didn't like, but I don't know enough about it.
Okay, what's the song that you liked?
I liked the song from Brokeback Mountain, and it didn't get nominated.
Okay. That's interesting. Who did that song? Do you recollect off the top of your head?
No, I don't.
Okay. Because we have a Dolly Parton country tune that really is a special tune, and the rest of it sounds like hip-hop. Traditional kind of, top 40 hip-hop there. And I'm wondering if that's taking an interest, just as the George Clooney's are kind of heading up and raising the bar. I'm wondering if we're lowering the bar a little bit by just accepting tune stacks like that. Do you have a theory in general on that?
One of the great phrases about Hollywood is from a writer named William Goldman, who's the guy who wrote Butch Cassidy and The Sundance Kid and Princess Bride, among other things. And his phrase about Hollywood is, quote, "Nobody knows anything." So you get these executives in a room, and they think, well, hip-hop is selling. We better put some hip-hop songs in there, and we can make some extra money. And their concern is making the extra money. It's not doing what's best for the film.
Gotcha. Talk to me about Philip Seymour Hoffman.
What an actor he is.
Wow, spectacular.
Have you interviewed him?
I have not.
You should get him for your show. He's really smart. He's a terrific actor, and he doesn't look in real life or sound anything like Truman Capote. He's twice as big. He's very straight. His voice is deep. He's got a great sense of humor. He's just one of the best actors around. That performance is astonishing, especially because Truman Capote is somebody we all have vivid memories of seeing. I mean, we know what he sounded like. We know what he looked like.
Do you think that's a more difficult role for an actor to portray, Joel, to do a biopic? Well, it's not really a biopic, but he's actually he's becoming the person as opposed to inventing and creating a character. Which is more difficult in your estimation,
you know,
do you think?
I want to say inventing a character is the most difficult. But in this instance, I don't think that that's true. Because we are so familiar with Truman Capote, and it's not an impersonation, because he's Truman Capote when we look at him, and he looks like Truman Capote, but when he turns his back and we can't see his face, he's still Truman Capote.
Yeah, he's had a series of roles. Do you consider him a character actor?
Oh, absolutely.
And do you think that he has a future as a leading man in some senses?
And I don't think he does either.
Okay.
I mean, he understands, same thing is true with Paul Giamatti.
Oh, wow. He's listed here also for Cinderella Man.
Yeah, for Best Supporting Actor.
And what was he in his previous picture? Was he considered a leading man in Sideways?
And he wasn't Oscar nominated. I don't think he was considered the leading man.
Would you rather be a leading man or a character actor?
I'd rather be a character actor.
Same here. Absolutely.
Hey,
absolutely.
Character actors go on forever. Leading men like movie stars have a very short lifespan.
Yeah, you got to stay young and skinny forever.
Anything. We can make jokes, we can say dirty words. You know, we can stand on the side and mumble to ourselves.
I'm with you 100%. What movies would you have liked to see get nominated and brought into the spotlight that didn't actually make it, Joe?
Well, very honest, I'm concerned about Hollywood. I'm concerned about the Oscar. This is the first time in Oscar history that none of the nominated best pictures have done over $75 million at the box office.
Why is that, do you think?
Well, because Hollywood is more interested in box office, the major studios, than they are in quality.
What were the top three earners off the top of your head this season?
Off the top of my head, it would have been Revenge of the Sith, the Harry Potter movie, and I think Narnia.
Okay, and what does that say about our culture? In 700 words or less.
It's not bad things. Those are pretty good movies.
Okay.
And I think people go to the movies to have a good time, and there's nothing wrong with that, and there's nothing wrong with Oscar admitting that. I loved King Kong.
Okay.
And I would have liked to have seen King Kong nominated for a bunch of Oscars.
Nominated for what categories, Joel?
Oh, I think Best Actress. Certainly the below the line stuff. But I think it could have been nominated for Best Picture of the Year.
Interesting. Danny here has a question for you. Go ahead, sweetie.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Is King Kong, Batman Begins, War of the Worlds, some of these films nominated for things like sound or art, but why isn't the Academy acknowledging films like that? Because they're not serious? Or do you have a theory?
Is it intellectual content or what, Joel?
Yeah, I think it's intellectual content, and there's a prejudice on the part of the voters. The reason that they're nominated for all these below-the-line Oscars is that in the Academy, actors nominate actors. Sound editors nominate in that category. Makeup artists nominate only makeup, but everybody nominates for Best Picture.
That's an interesting question here. Who do you think we're going to be watching for in the next couple of years from the young actors and actresses here? We're all familiar with the Jessica Albas and the Johnny Depps and so forth, but who is actually going to expand, say, in the next three summers, that's really going to become a dominant force?
If I could predict that, I'd be running a studio instead of talking to you in the morning.
Do you think there's...
And I'd rather be talking to you in the morning.
Okay, do you think there's any hope for Jessica Simpson?
No.
even with
Even with
industrial strength acting lessons?
Well, here's a question for you. How about Justin Timberlake? Because I heard his recent film, He's Not That Bad.
I didn't hear the guy. There was a little... I heard Justin Timberlake.
Yeah, there you go. Is he? No, wait. She's.
I'm being serious. He's on a film that's in, what's his name, Cassavetes? His film, it's in Sundance.
Who knows?
Nick Cassavetes is a good filmmaker. One never knows.
It's an interesting parlay, because I think what you may be reflecting on here, Danny, is that there are actors who merely behave. They're not really acting.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
They can get up and be. It's like watching Courtney Love as the dope-addicted hooker in the Larry Flint movie. That's not acting. That's just being. And there's points for that, but just not as many as actual acting and stuff. Joel Siegel, one of the most famous movie critics ever.
Oh, thank you
so much for joining us here this morning, Joel.
Pleasure.
Roth Radio, good to go. God bless. Have a great day, Joel. 866-313-3733. Give us a call. Tell us what you thought of what Joel had to say there. That's a privilege. Joel Siegel is one of the most famous names here. And he had points, too, that you don't think about. Like when he was talking about Good Night and Good Luck. An extraordinary movie. And he's right. Now that I think about it, there was no music there. That's a whole nother extra cost. And it was all shot indoors. I remember when The Avengers came out. And it was always a real existential. There were never any actors outside. The city was always empty. The city was always vacated, right? And it turns out they just couldn't afford any actors. Extras. Tonight on History for All the Wrong Reasons, me, Dave Roth, live broadcasting from the nerve center of our gangland stronghold, New York, Philadelphia, Dallas, Boston, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, West Palm Beach. Give us on here. Eliza wants to talk from Boston. Hutch, go ahead and reprogram the thing here and I'll talk to her. Eliza, you're on.
Hi.
What's cooking, Eliza?
Well, I know it's going to sound like I'm beating a dead horse, but I went to see Brokeback Mountain. And I was really excited to go see it. I even dragged my boyfriend. And I walked away really disappointed.
Why did you walk away disappointed?
Well, a couple of different factors. One is that in the beginning, it didn't start as a love story. I viewed Jake's character as more of a predator. And, the first scene, it was almost like a rape. I view it as towards Heath Ledger's character. In the end, it did end up being a love story.
And did you have a warm, fuzzy feeling at the end of the movie? As Joel Siegel was indicating, perhaps that is one of the ways that you judge the impact of the movie.
It was a good ending, and I like how they ended it. But another factor is that Heath Ledger, he had a huge problem with the accent. I mean, Joel Siegel was correct in respect to that, Heath Ledger is a phenomenal actor. He was able to express things through body language and expression. But it was very apparent that he had a hard time with the American cowboy southern accent.
Okay, and you found that to be a distraction?
Absolutely.
Well,
I was very distracted by that.
That's a very interesting point. Thanks for calling in, Eliza. David Lee Roth, large and in charge. My special guest was Danny here this morning. Animal, you have a whole list of movies you're going to go see here. Be Young, Be Bad.
Yeah.
I'm headed for where the deer and the antelope play and never is heard a discouraging word. I'm going to go get a drink, baby.
Go ahead, I'll hit it up, man. Swing.